Welcome to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio, bringing you insights and strategies to help you create a magnificent and fulfilling second half of life. Here's your host, certified professional retirement coach and best-selling author, Dr. Dorian Mincer.
I want to welcome everybody to the fourth Tuesday Revolutionize Your Retirement Interview with Expert series. I'm Dori Mincer, owner of Revolutionize Retirement and your host for the series. So, without any further ado, I want to introduce you to my guest today, who I'm so delighted to have with us. It's Richard Eisenberg. I met Richard a number of years ago at various conferences, and I've seen him off and on over the years. He's managing editor of PBS's NextAvenue.org, a site for people in their 50s and 60s. I remember when Next Avenue just started, people were saying it was the Sesame Street for adults. Mm-hmm. I think it is. It's so much learning and opportunities to kind of think and some wonderful articles. It's just a great place. So if those of you who don't know about it, I recommend that you sign up for it, and Richard will tell us more about it during the call. He's also editor of the site's Money and Work and Purpose channels, and he's a frequent blogger there. Previously, he was executive editor of Money Magazine and front page finance editor for Yahoo. He's the author of two books, How to Avoid a Midlife Financial Crisis, and also the Money Book of Personal Finance. So, Rich, I'm so delighted that you're able to be with us today. And I know that over the years, there have been just many wonderful articles on Next Avenue about retirement. And I know you had said you wanted to kind of pull from them and focus on, you know, really what are the ways to have a happy retirement. So we're going to be talking about that today. So maybe we can start, let's just start with the question of sort of what got you interested in this area of life, and then we'll get into the ways to make retirement a happy time.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Dori. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you today. I'm a huge fan of yours, too. And as you say, I am with Next Avenue. NextAvenue.org is our website. And I was part of our launch team when we started back in 2011. And I guess what got me interested in joining Next Avenue and being part of it is I spent my career as a journalist primarily writing and editing about personal finance and careers. I'm 52 right now. And so when I heard about this idea for a website for people in their 50s and 60s, to help them navigate their lives, I thought it sounded like a very interesting idea. It would give me a chance to do some work based on what I've learned over the years, but also to keep learning and then to pass on what I'm learning to our readers through articles that I write and articles that I edit.
Great. And you've certainly been doing that over these years. I must say I always look forward to getting the Next Avenue blogs. And just to mention to people, they're the Next Avenue blogs, at least most of them, and maybe you'll tell us about that as we go along too, are also on Forbes.com. So you have two opportunities to read about it. So why don't we start with just, you know, why is it important for people to figure out what they want out of retirement, and you know, how to just think about how to try to do that and to make retirement be the kind of life stage that they want?
I think it's very important, primarily because there's very little being done to help people plan for the transition for retirement. There's a lot being done to help them manage their money in retirement and invest for retirement and even think about how to manage their money once they're in retirement. But there's not a whole lot being done to help people plan for retirement. And I mean plan for sort of day-to-day living. What are you going to do with your time? How are you going to find fulfillment in retirement? And so I feel like the more people can do in advance to think about that and plan on that and talk with people about that, people who are already retired, with their spouses or partners, the happier they're going to be once they actually get into retirement. Because the people I've found who don't do this kind of planning for retirement and thinking about the transition are often the ones who are most unhappy with retirement because they just haven't thought about what they were going to do, and now they're sort of perplexed.
Do you find that happens a lot? In your writing and work, that many people sort of fall into retirement, maybe out of default, and really end up not being so happy with the day-to-day life?
Yeah, I do think that's true. And I've seen some research that show that. Now, there's some people who are forced into retirement because they lose their job or they have health issues. But there are also people who have made a decision they're going to retire, but they just haven't really thought about what they're going to do during that time. And there's a terrific book that I read recently. I wrote about it on Next Avenue about the it's called Discontentment in Retirement. And this author, who's a professor in the University of Toronto, interviewed people who were formerly doctors and college professors and CEOs and homemakers, all of whom were really not happy with how retirement was going for them. And it wasn't about money. It was about fulfillment. And all of them said that they wish that they had thought more in advance and planned for it more in advance and figured out what it was going to be. For a lot of people, when they get into retirement, a big issue for them is a loss of status and identity. They wonder who they are now because they've spent so many years being identified as a certain person, maybe with a certain title, the jobs that they did at home, and now they are a different person and they're not quite sure who they are. So the more people can plan for that, the better. There's been some really interesting research on this just recently from a bunch of college professors from Harvard IT, a professor named Teresa Amabile, who's written some articles about the problems people are having facing the transition to retirement. And yet the people who do figure this out or figure it out along the way are often very happy with retirement.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned two really great resources. Thank you. So I would bet that as this call goes on, we're going to get some other good resources on it. So what are some of I'll just pull one out. Like, should people think about relocating for retirement? I mean, should that be one of the things people think about? Or do you think it's more starting with, you know, who am I if I don't have that role anymore?
Well, certainly where to live is a key decision for people in retirement. And it may be that relocating is the best idea because you'll move to a part of the country you would rather live in. Maybe you want to get away from the cold winters, or maybe you want to live closer to your children or your grandchildren. A lot of people choose not to move in retirement because they like where they live. They know people there. They're very happy there. They may choose to downsize and maybe sell their house and move into an apartment or a condominium, but they want to stay in the area. So I do think it's important to think about, well, where would I want to live and why? And some people say, well, I want to move to a different part of the country, or maybe even to a different country. And they do that and they find it's not fulfilling for them because once they get there, it's not what they expected it to be. They don't know people there. Other people are very happy with it, and it's the best decision they've ever made. So I would just say if you are thinking about relocating, you'll want to spend some time in that place before you make a move there. If you can spend a week or a few weeks or a few months to see what it would be like to be living there, not as a tourist, but as a resident, that will help you see whether it's the kind of place that you actually want to live in.
And I think that's really good advice. I've seen sometimes with both friends, colleagues, as well as clients, that even taking a vacation somewhere, though, sometimes doesn't give you that sense of what it's going to be like to uproot and not have, you know, the community or the contacts that you had where you were. So sometimes, you know, even that, unfortunately, doesn't totally solve the problem, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving is part of it, trying to figure out kind of who am I, what's going to give me fulfillment in life. I know I always say it's hard enough for an individual, and then if you're part of a relationship, it can be more complicated because there can be, you know, differences in kind of what you want, what your dreams are, hopes, interests, as well as health and energy. What's been your experience with couples and if they do or don't talk about retirement, and do you think it's important for them to?
Well, I'll tell you what I know, but I should quickly ask, you're the authority on couples and retirement, so I'm very eager to hear what you would have to say about this. But I will say that based on what I've learned on stories that we've done on Next Avenue, it surprises me how little couples, and whether they're married or not, talk with each other about how they envision retirement. They tend to do it in broad strokes. They talk about sort of having some freedom and maybe being able to travel, but they don't really talk about sort of, well, what are we going to do with ourselves every day? And what's life going to be like when we're both together all the time and that sort of thing. And so I feel like the more you can have those conversations and be really honest with each other about it, because maybe you both have different ideas about how you envision retirement, about how much you'll travel or what you're going to do with your time. And that doesn't mean that one's right or one's wrong, but it's better to know that going in and maybe make adjustments if need be than to find out once you get there. If I've spoken to a financial planner named Neil Frankel, and he wrote a piece on Next Avenue where he says he really feels it's useful for couples to not only to talk about the retirement dreams, but to literally write them down and then mark them down as which are a must-have, what's a want, and what's a wish, and then be ready to do some compromising.
Oh, I think that's great. His article was on what couples should talk about. Was that the...
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah, I mean... It's so hard, and what I found, and maybe you found it similar, that sometimes it's hard for couples to talk because the individuals within the couple haven't really taken that time to do what you initially said, which is really think about, you know, kind of what their vision is for on a day-to-day basis, how they want to spend their time, what kind of things they may want to do, what things they don't want to do, how they just want to be. Do you find that too, that it's just even hard for individuals to really let themselves visualize that?
I think that's true. I mean, it's a little scary for people to be thinking about this new chapter of their life that's going to be so different from the past. And so in some ways, people, I feel, you know, just don't talk about it because they don't want to express, you know, even to their, you know, their closest loved one, what they're thinking about, what's on their mind, what's worrying them. And so they tend to just sort of keep it inside. There's a really terrific book about retirement written by the late Washington Post reporter Stan Hinden. That's Hinden, H-I-N-D. D-E-N. The book was called How to Retire Happy, and I thought he has a lot of really great points in the book about retiring happy. And one of the things I thought was sort of funny but helpful was he mentioned that he was married, and he and his wife came up with a system for them about how they were going to retire together and what they were going to do in terms of spending time together. They loved each other, but they just felt like they didn't want to spend all their time just with each other. So what they came up with was a plan where early in the week, every week, they'd spend some time alone or with their friends, and then at the end of the week, that's when they would be doing things together, like going to museums or theaters or restaurants, and that worked out for the Hindens. It's not necessarily what everybody should do, but I thought it was smart that they figured out what worked for them.
No, that does sound like a good advice, and I know that book too. I recommend that book too. What I sometimes recommend to people is, you know, whether it be at the beginning of the month or it can be even just the beginning of the week, to look at the week and to figure out what days do we want to do something together, you know, during the day or evening if people are actually at home, you know, 24/7. And then what time, you know, what are the dates that one or the other has other things they want to do, and that way, you know, you can kind of know what you can look forward to in terms of the couple and what kind of days you want to, you know, really think about, you know, I either want to do something on my own or I want to make plans with someone else, so that you don't set yourself up for a lot of disappointment of expecting the other to be available when they're not.
Right. And I think it's good to have some alone time, some me time for yourself, you know, not to take anything away from being married and having a loving relationship, but it's good to, you know, do things on your own sometimes too. You've probably seen this or heard the stories of the couples where the husband has spent his career working in a profession and maybe the wife was at home, and now suddenly the husband's home all the time and doesn't quite know what to do with himself, so he decides he's going to do things like rearrange all the spices or move things around and without telling his wife about it. And that can really get on somebody's nerves. And, you know, not to say that maybe that's not a good idea, but it's a good idea to talk about it before you do it.
I do agree. There's such setups for either disappointments or, you know, disconnected expectations of each other. So I think that the communication is so, so important. So, you've mentioned the term, and I know I'm a believer in thinking about retirement as a transition with, you know, the endings, the unknowns, new beginnings. What's your sense of how well people do in the transitioning, you know, both into it, but then during it also? Do you have a sense of that, you know, or articles to recommend that people, when people have kind of talked about that that transition part?
Yeah, well, we've published a few stories along those lines on Next Avenue, and what I'm finding is that a lot of people, whether they are in relationships or they're not, don't do a whole lot of thinking about the transition into retirement. Some people do. Some of them meet with an advisor or they talk to their spouse about it. But a lot of people don't. And the thing that is frustrating to me, as you mentioned, besides editing the Money Channel, I edit our Work and Purpose Channel. And I saw a study that I wrote about recently that showed that employees are very frustrated that their employers are doing very little, usually nothing, to help them prepare for the transition to retirement. And yeah, you know, they'll have, you know, seminars about investing in the 401k, but they do next to nothing, and usually nothing, to talk about, well, what's your life going to be like when you do retire, and how will you spend your time, and what might be some ways that you could find meaning in your life, and maybe do volunteering. And so I feel like, you know, people aren't doing much about thinking about the transition, and they don't really know where to turn to get that kind of help. You know, there are retirement coaches and there are life coaches, and they can be helpful, but people typically don't use them. If they use any kind of advisor, it's a financial advisor, and I would say most financial advisors don't think about these kinds of things, and they don't have that kind of expertise either. What they're good at is helping you manage your money well.
Right. It is a bit of a conundrum in that, but I mean, I do think that when people avail themselves of retirement coaches, or, I mean, there are some financial planners that have a more holistic kind of life retirement openness to it that I think help people look at that. But it is true that the more traditional doesn't focus on it, which does, I mean, retirement, and you said this sort of at the beginning, and I'm a firm believer, you know, the finances are important, but that's only one piece of it. And, you know, it's sort of the money, but more than the money. That money gives you options to be able to do things. Do you have a sense of kind of how would you define, or what is a retirement income plan? I mean, how would you define that or describe it? And what would be helpful for people to think about in relation to a retirement income plan?
Yeah, coming up with a retirement income plan, I think, is really one of the real keys to having a happy retirement. And a retirement income plan is basically just a way of figuring out, where's your money going to come from in retirement? How much will you get from your 401k and your other accounts? And how will that translate into monthly income? How much will you get from Social Security? If you have any pensions coming, how much will they be? And then once you know what kind of income is coming in, and maybe you'll be doing some work in retirement, so you can add that in as well. But then you can start thinking about, okay, so how much can I really afford to withdraw from my retirement accounts every year so I have enough to live on, but I also don't outlive my money? You know, there's a rule of thumb that financial advisors have used for many years that have said that if you take out about 4% a year of your retirement savings, that's a good ballpark figure. And, you know, that's probably useful for many people, but it's probably not right for everybody. And these days, particularly because interest rates have been so low for so long, some financial advisors are saying, well, maybe instead of taking out 4% a year, you should be thinking about taking out more like 3% a year, because you can't count on your retirement income to be paying you a lot of interest or dividends these days the way you might have in the past. So you want to figure out, where's my money going to come from? How much can I afford to take out? And also you want to think about the taxes, because there are going to be tax implications based on where your money is coming from, what money you're taking out of which account, your taxable accounts, your tax-free accounts, your tax-sheltered accounts. And I think if you can devise a retirement income plan before you retire, that will relieve you with some of the stress once you are retired, because you can say, okay, I'm going to have this amount that I can live on. These are what I think my expenses are going to be, and you can feel more comfortable that you can manage. Or maybe you'll say, you know what, I don't think I'm going to have enough money to cover my expenses, so I need to find some sort of part-time work, which more and more people are doing in retirement. And, you know, the sooner you know that, the happier you'll be, because you won't find yourself really worried about being able to pay the bills.
Can you maybe talk a little more about that? About, I mean, It's so interesting. I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, that just even the word retirement is such a loaded issue these days. You know, is retirement retiring from the position you had? It's not retiring from life. And when announcements went out about this talk, I got a few emails from people saying, I don't ever plan to retire. And it's sort of interesting to think about what different ways that people think about retirement. And you're just saying, and I think it's a model many people have, that people may want to retire from full-time work, but decide, you know what, I really do want to work part-time, or I want to do something different but part-time and earn money. Can you maybe speak more about that experience?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the word retirement doesn't mean today what it meant 10 or even or 30 or 50 years ago. You know, it used to be when people talked about retirement, they meant leaving my job, full stop, and not doing any kind of work, but spending the rest of my time in my life leisurely and maybe moving to a sunnier climate, but basically just, you know, relaxing. These days, that is the kind of retirement that some people have, but it's not the retirement that a lot of people have. And sometimes that's by choice and sometimes it's by necessity. But increasingly people are saying, you know what, I want more out of life than just sitting and relaxing and playing tennis and golf. I want to do something. And that could be working part-time. That could be volunteering. It could be starting an encore career where you are giving back and finding meaning and purpose in your life. And, you know, people are also living longer than they used to. So, you know, I think they're thinking, well, do I really want to just do nothing for 20 or 30 years? And a lot of people are saying to themselves, no, that's not how I want to live my life. I want to be active. I want to be engaged. I want to be vital in my community. And so people are finding their own definitions of retirement. We have a writer who writes for Next Avenue often who's terrific. His name is Chris Farrell, and he's written a book called Unretirement, and I think that's a pretty good word to think about these days. It's not the retirement we used to think about, but it's also not full-time work either.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's coming out with a new book pretty soon.
That's right.
About
he has a book that's coming out later this month called Purpose and a Paycheck. And it's really about doing some work in retirement or volunteering in retirement where you're finding meaning out of the work that you're doing. So it's often a lot of people get to this point in life and they say, well, I've enjoyed my career, but I feel like now I'm ready to do something that's going to be meaningful for me personally, but also I feel like I'm doing something that's going to be helpful to other people, whether it's the community or it's the world.
Yeah, I do find that becomes so important for people to feel that they matter, that what they do matter. Because, I mean, it ties back into really where we started about, you know, for some people, the giving up their identity or the change in identity if they're not working. And I want to go back to that maybe for a moment. Do you find, well, first of all, are there some articles you want to recommend to people around the kind of identity shift that happens? And have you found at all that people who've worked as professionals have more difficulty and are often people who end up, you know, wanting to use their skills in different ways? Or is there, you know, have you found any kind of correlation of that at all? Or?
Well, yeah, we have found that in some of the articles we've published. There was one article we wrote in on Next Avenue called I'm Retired, Now Who Am I? But it isn't necessarily only professionals. Sometimes it's type A personalities who might have had any type of job or not even a job, but they are just the kind of people who just feel like, you know, they need some sort of goal every day, and they need to be doing something to, you know, sort of to them make life worth living every day. And they can be, you know, type A personalities can be sometimes tough to be with or live with. But for people like that who spent their whole lives, you know, being type A in a certain job, and now that job has gone away, many of them are finding it to be a really difficult transition for them. And sometimes those are professionals, doctors, and sometimes there are people who had other types of jobs, but just really, really focused on what they were doing.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that is important to just think about, you know, people where work is what defines them, and the not working leaves them sort of out of kilter, kind of too much in limbo.
Yeah.
So that just makes me also think about kind of the whole timing of retirement. What's been your experience and any advice for people about how to think about when is the, quote, right time to retire, either totally or, you know, to think about working in a different way. Do you have a sense of that?
Well, I do think that choosing when to retire and then following through with that, if you can, is really important and can make retirement much happier than if you just sort of find yourself retired and had not expected to do that. There's a really good book that came out a few years ago called The Retirement Maze, M-A-Z-E. And for this book, the author surveyed about 1,500 retirees to find out what made the happy ones so happy. And what they found was that the workers who were able to retire by choice were happier than the ones who had retirement thrust on them. I think the number I saw was 69% of who retired by choice said they were satisfied with their lifestyle, but only 36% who were pushed into retirement said that they were. Now, I want to be clear, I understand that not everybody is lucky enough to be able to make the choice of when to retire. Many of us end up being retired because our employer tells us they don't want us anymore, or our health deteriorates to the point where we can't work. But for people who are able to make that decision, I do think it's much better, if you can, to say to yourself, okay, I'm going to retire at X age or X years from now, and here's what I'm going to be doing between now and then to get ready for that, and here's why I want to do it at that point. And it may be a function of finances. It may have to do with when you want to start claiming Social Security, but it may just be about when you feel like you're ready to start your next chapter.
And I think that's really helpful for people to, I mean, there isn't any right way. And it's true that I think having a choice, which not everybody has, does help. And yet it can be kind of confounding to kind of figure out when is the right time then. So, I mean, you have mentioned, and I think, I don't know that particular book, but I'm going to look into it. So that somehow having a choice, somehow it sounds like, can help it maybe be a happier retirement because you're not being forced into it. Do you think, are there other parts to that, you think?
Well, you know, I feel like the more you can be in control over what your retirement is going to be, the happier you will be in retirement. So if you can say, this is when I'm going to do it, this is where I'm going to do it, this is how I'm going to spend my time, you know, it's your retirement as opposed to, you know, suddenly sort of finding yourself one day not having a job anymore and being in retirement and not really planning for what it's going to be and wondering where you're going to spend your time and what you're going to do with it. You know, it's not to say you can't have a happy retirement when that happens, but I think it's harder that way.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a really important point. And what about, I mean, I know that, you know, some people say, well, I don't want to work full-time, I want to work part-time, and maybe they're not able to negotiate where they were working to work part-time. How difficult, I mean, I know there are studies that say it's harder for the, quote, mature worker to find work, but what's been your sense of how hard is it for people who are, quote, kind of retirement age, I guess I would say, what, 50 or 60 upward, to find a job? What's your sense of that?
Well, I wish that employers were doing more to be helpful in this way. You know, there's an idea that some employers use, but not very many, called phased retirement. And phased retirement just basically means somebody has been working full-time 5 days a week, and what they want to do is gradually work less. So maybe now they're working 5 days a week, next they're going to work 4 days a week, and over time 3 days, and maybe 2 days, maybe one, and then ultimately no days. A lot of people really like that idea because it lets them transition into retirement. It lets them keep their job but not work all the time. It gives them some flexibility and some time to explore other things to do or do volunteering or just take care of chores or caregiving. But not very many companies do it. The last number I saw was only 9% of employers have any kind of a phased retirement formal program. What a lot of companies, employers will do is have what they call an ad hoc program, which is to say, well, if you come to me, the boss, you come to the boss and say, I'd like to do this, maybe the boss will figure out something that'll work for you. And they tend to want to do that with the, you know, the people they like the most, maybe the senior executives, the ones that are most worried about losing full time. So it's possible to do that, but it's hard to do that. And then aside from that, in terms of just looking for a job on your own, you know, we've all heard and know a lot about the gig economy, the idea of working jobs, which could range from, you know, driving a car for Uber to being a dog walker, that sort of thing. And, you know, a lot of these jobs did not exist a few years ago, and I feel like many of them are the kinds of work that people can do part-time in retirement, where they set their own hours, and, you know, what they won't get is benefits typically, but what they will get is some income and a place to go and something to do and maybe something to give them satisfaction. Also, some people decide that they're going to start a business in retirement, or maybe part-time in retirement, or maybe full-time, because they've had an itch for a while, or they see a need that they want to fill, and they just could never do it before. And there have been some studies that show that people who start businesses in their 50s and 60s tend to be among the most successful entrepreneurs, because they've been around, they know how to, you know, how to run things. They know the field that they're in. They have networks and contacts of people to talk to about it. They have better finances than people who are much younger, so it may be easier for them to get money. So there's that as well. And then there are just regular part-time jobs, and those I think are the hardest to get, other than maybe sort of seasonal jobs. But it's very hard to get an employer to want to hire you when you are in your 60s for a part-time job or a full-time job because of age discrimination. And I wish that wasn't so, but yeah, every survey I've seen about this shows it definitely is.
Right. And unfortunately, ageism is alive and well. And yet, what you're highlighting, and it would be so nice, as you said, it's not just for employers to offer pre-retirement help for people, but if employers could recognize the wisdom and perspective and innovative and creative ideas that older workers bring. But unfortunately, it's rarer for employers to see that.
I want to believe that might be changing. I don't think it's going to change dramatically overnight, but I feel like, you know, there may be more phase retirement programs starting up in the future. There's a new website and a group called Respectful Exits that's all about trying to get employers to do this. And I feel like the drumbeat is beginning to be heard. And I feel like maybe over the next few years, we'll see more employers willing to create those programs, or maybe at least be willing to arrange for it on an individual basis. And you know, getting a part-time job in retirement, there's more to it than just being able to have income. A lot of people find when they're working part-time retirement, they enjoy it because it keeps their mind sharp. It helps them from feeling isolated or lonely. So there are a lot of, you know, benefits to working in retirement besides just the money.
Absolutely, which leads it to, I was just about to ask, and I mean, it just makes me think more about just, you know, maybe if you could speak a little more about why it's important to stay engaged and healthy and connected in retirement, because I know there's been a lot of research that talks about that, and that's really what you're alluding to right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think we don't want to minimize the health benefits of staying active and engaged in retirement, and whether that's working for a paid job or it's volunteering. But, you know, getting out and being with people and being useful, you know, the studies have shown that tends to help people physically and mentally, that it helps. It doesn't prevent dementia. Nothing's going to do that, but it may make you less likely to have it. That's what some studies have shown. And loneliness is a huge problem for many people in their 60s and 70s and 80s, because once they retire, many of them, you know, stay home. They don't see people. They don't go out. And that can take a real toll on you physically and mentally. So being able to do some sort of part-time work or volunteering and being with other people can be a very, very helpful thing for you personally and make your retirement happier.
Absolutely. I just want to encourage people, if you want to submit any questions or comments, just know that in a little bit I'm going to be integrating some into my conversation with Richard. I'd love it if you could talk a little more about, because you've just talked about the importance of, you know, sort of not isolating too much, and whether it be work or volunteering or, and I know a lot of times we talk about, you know, helping people find their kind of passion, and some people say, oh, I don't want to hear from passion. I don't have passions. But just, you know, just thinking about interest for some people, it's what did you want to do that you had to put on the back burner because of all the other responsibilities. But maybe you could speak a little about from your experience and some of the articles of, you know, how, where can people go to learn new things or to pursue new interests or pursue their passions if they actually do have some passions that they haven't had time for? Can you speak to that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. New things or pursuing your passions can really help make retirement happier for you, because you'll be spending time either doing something that you love to do or you used to love to do or you've always thought about doing, and now you're actually having some time to do it. And, you know, it could be things you did when you were younger, like playing an instrument or painting, or maybe you've never done that before, but you've always wanted to, and this is finally a time to do it because you have the time to do it. And if you don't know anything about how, you can take classes or you can be tutored on it. There are so many school programs, community colleges, and things like that that can help you learn these kinds of things and be in a group with other people of your age who are also exploring these new avenues themselves too. I would really recommend people look for adult education classes at local colleges and continuing education classes to learn some new skills or just to provide knowledge just for the pure joy of knowledge.
I'm a great believer in lifelong learning. So what about when people say, you know, I've worked so hard, I'm burnt out, I don't want a schedule. Can you talk? I mean, my experience is without having some kind of a schedule or a reason to get out of bed in the morning, it can be a slippery slope, but I'm not sure it has to be the same kind of schedule we had before. Can you, you know, maybe talk a little about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. I do feel, and the experts that we've talked to at Next Avenue say that it's helpful in retirement to keep a schedule, but not like the one that you had before you retired. There was a study we wrote about from Taiwan that said the key to a happy retirement is not how much free time you have, but how you're managing whatever free time you have. And so what they're saying is, you know, you don't need to block out every minute of every day, but it's helpful to set goals and priorities for your free time and then see whether they're appropriate and achievable. So you might, you know, write them down, organize the things you want to do this week or this day, and just don't do it hour by hour. Just do it broadly.
Right.
And then see, you know, does that seem to make sense for you? And are you doing too much? Are you not doing enough? Is there a better way to manage your time? And I feel like once you sort of have plotted that out, generally speaking, you will have more of a desire to get up in the morning, because you'll say, okay, well, today's the day I'm going to do X, or I know I'm going to be doing that Thursday, as opposed to saying, oh, it's another day. What am I going to do? I don't want to just sit on my sofa and watch TV all day.
Right. Yeah, I do agree. I think some schedule, some sense of something to look forward to. I mean, I guess that's how I think about it, is really helpful. And it can be including if you happen to be lucky to have children or grandchildren, or to do that, or volunteering, or the work. But maybe I think it's also important probably to have some free time that would help make retirement happy. Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is free time important?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always important, but particularly in retirement. You don't want to overschedule yourself. You want to enjoy life as much as you can. And so give yourself time to do nothing, or to take a drive or take a hike and go places you haven't been before, or go back to places you have been just to remember what that place was like in the past. And, you know, do have some time every day or some days where you just don't have anything to do, because that's enjoyable too.
Great. So if it's okay with you, I want to start integrating some questions from people now. Is that all right with you?
Absolutely.
Some additional questions. So I want to encourage people to send in more. First, could you just mention, one of the questions is, would you mention again the Sam Hinden's book?
Yes, absolutely. excuse me. The author is Stan, S-T-A-N, Hinden, H-I-N-D-E-N. And the book is called, excuse me, How to Retire Happy. And he wrote it when he was at the, I think, just leaving the Washington Post, and then he updated it many years. It's very good.
Thanks. Maria from Washington, D.C. says, for a single person with little or no surviving family relatives, she says, you need to consider building a complex support network. Any special advice for those who are sometimes called, quote, adult orphans? she says she fully agrees about addressing the emotional aspects of retirement, but would really like some suggestions about building this support network.
Well, that's a really great question and a really important topic, because it is true that if you don't have a family or children or people like that, it can be harder to make retirement successful and happy for you. We've done quite a few articles about this on Next Avenue. As you say, sometimes these people are called elder orphans. The phrase that people often prefer to use these days is the word solo ager. And there's an excellent book about retirement planning for solo agers that came out last year. It's by an author named Sara, S-A-R-A, Zeff, Z-E-F-F, Gaber, G-E-B-E-R. And it's all about solo agers. And her advice is to find people that you can count on, that you can trust to help you, particularly with the financial part of retirement. So, you know, when you're thinking about things like estate planning, or who's going to take care of my possessions after I'm gone, or who's going to help me to deal with any medical decisions I'll need to make, maybe when I'm not able to make them. You want to have some trusted advocates at your side that know that you're going to be counting on them and they're willing to do it. So I'd say that the more you can work on that and plan on that in advance, the better off you'll be.
I totally agree. And many of you may have heard, I interviewed Sarah last year when her book came out. And actually, maybe a couple of years before that, before her book came out, it's a really helpful book. And I'm also going to be interviewing in a few months Joy Leverode, who has a book on Who's Going to Take Care of Me When I'm Old, which is also about, you know, sort of thinking about how to build in that support network for yourself. So Loretta from Golden says she's going to be retiring in early March by her choosing, and she's always packed her days and evenings full, full, full. She's trying to be thoughtful about how to commit her time after the retirement. So far, she signed up for an Ironman. Training takes a lot of time, and she started playing the piano for pay a couple of hours a week. So her question is, what are signs indicating it's time to start filling up the calendar again?
You know, I think you'll find those signs yourself once there. You can. It sounds like she's on track and that she's already got a few things planned, and she knows they're going to take some time. And I think she'll probably say, you know what, I need more to do. Or maybe the reverse. Maybe, you know, this is taking too much time. I need some time for myself. So I feel like it's impossible to know exactly how much free time you want to build in before you're there. But I think once you are in retirement, you'll start seeing after a few months sort of whether you're happy with the kind of schedule that you've made for yourself, and whether you want to, you know, cut back on some things or maybe build some more things into the schedule. So in some cases, you just won't know till you try it for yourself.
Great, thanks. And Vicki from Chicago, well, two things. One, she had a comment saying that the book I just mentioned, Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old, does address also how to plan for solo aging. So she just wanted people to know that. But she also had a question. She says, Richard, you identified a gap in how employers educate employees on financial issues, but not life issues, to consider going into retirement. Yet many soon-to-be retirees do not seek out coaching around this area. What or how do you feel this target group can be best served?
I think that the more advice you can get from knowledgeable people, the better. And sometimes that means going to a professional, like a retirement coach or a life coach, and sitting down with them to discuss what your future might be like and how to make it happy. It can also mean spending some time with people who are already retired and find out what's working for them, what mistakes have they made along the way, and how would they do things differently. And I feel like the more you talk to people who either have the expertise on what to do and how to do it, or people who've actually been there or are there right now, the better off you're going to be rather than try to do it all on your own.
No, I think that's good advice. And I have a question here, Jay from Virginia Beach, and there was one other person who really asked a very similar question, since I think at the beginning the topic was 10 ways to have a happy retirement or 10 secrets to a happy retirement. He says, so what are the 10 secrets to a happy retirement?
All right, well, I can check them off. We've talked about a lot of them, but I haven't numbered them as I've been speaking. So let me number them now. Number one is figure out in advance what you want out of retirement. Number two, if you have a husband, a wife, or partner, talk frankly together about what you both want out of retirement. Number three is plan your transition into retirement. Number four is come up with a retirement income plan. Number five is choose when to retire and then follow through if you can. Number six is stay engaged and healthy if you can. And we talked a little bit about that, but maybe it's mentioned here the importance of being engaged and trying to stay healthy, getting exercise, walking, swimming, doing sports, whatever you can, because the healthier you are, the lower your healthcare costs are going to be and the more likely you'll be able to live your retirement the way you want to live it. Getting back to my list, number seven is get a part-time job in retirement. Number eight is to learn new things or pursue your passions. Number nine is keep a schedule, but not like the one you had before you retired. And number 10, we didn't quite get to that yet, but maybe we can now, is if you have them, see your children and grandchildren if you have them. And by that I mean, you know, it may be that you didn't have the time or you live too far away to spend much time with your children and your grandchildren while you were working, but now that you have more free time, it's great to try to make the time to do it. And another thing Stan Hinton said in his book was, one of his favorite tips in his retirement do's and don'ts was find ways to be friends with your children and your grandchildren, even though they're busy. You need them, he said, and whether they realize it or not, they need you. So those are the 10.
Great. Good. So hopefully that will have, you know, sort of just pulling them together. But I want to stay with the 10th one about the children and grandchildren, if you have them. Mm-hmm. I know that many people, and somebody who I actually interviewed last month, too, who has a new book that's come out, but he's been so involved in the field, is Mark Friedman, who yep. has written the book How to Live Forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everybody, it is true, has children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews. But what Mark said, and I believe in too, and I'd love your comments on it too, Richard, is there's such an importance of intergenerational connection and learning.
Yes.
And so the volunteer work or just, I mean, I guess it could be volunteer work or visiting or developing a mentorship with somebody of just working with and having connections with people younger than you can add to that sense of purpose and meaning. I wondered if you could, you know, maybe speak to that too, because it is true, not everybody has children or grandchildren.
Right. Yeah, I think it's wonderful if you can find a way to be helpful, maybe be a mentor to younger people. They don't necessarily need to be ones that you're related to. In fact, often it's very meaningful when they're not. You mentioned Mark Friedman, who started and runs the group called Encore.org. They have an initiative that they call Generation to Generation, and it's a program that they're doing very well around the country, trying to get people over 50 to spend time helping young people. Sometimes it's helping them with, you know, planning to get into college, and sometimes it's reading them or tutoring them. Sometimes it's just spending time with them. And they work with all kinds of organizations, like Big Brother, Big Sister is one of them. And the studies that I've seen have shown that when people in retirement spend time with younger people, it energizes them. The young people often like to spend time with older people because they feel that they can get some wisdom from people who've been around longer than they have. I really do encourage people to try to make time to be helpful to younger people.
Great. And I'm just trying to get, there are a number of more questions that are here that I'm just having a little trouble with my computer thing right at the moment. But one of the ones, I think it was from Jay, who said, Next Avenue is a terrific resource. Have you looked into co-housing, or can you speak about some of the different housing models, and what's your sense of what's helpful for people during this retirement stage with that too?
Yeah, that's another great question. We have written on Next Avenue about co-housing and shared housing. And this is, you know, it's kind of the old Golden Girls TV show concept, the idea that you live in retirement with one or more roommates, people that you may or may not know. Sometimes people do that for companionship. Sometimes they do it for income because the person that's living with them is paying them some rent. But it can often be a really great way to avoid isolation and loneliness. Rather than living by yourself, you're living with somebody else and you're learning about them and they're learning about you, and you're sometimes doing things together. And increasingly there are programs around the country that act as matchmakers to help people find shared housing and co-housing. And so I would say if this is something that appeals to you, if you do a search online, chances are you'll be able to find a group that's local or national that might be able to help you to find somebody. All I would say is, you know, just like if you went to college and had a college roommate, you know that everybody's different, and you may want to, before agreeing to co-housing and shared housing with somebody else, you know, have a serious talk with that person to see what they're like, and they find out what you're like, and be sure that you have similar habits. You don't want to end up, you know, moving in or rooming with somebody who you find, you know, is a smoker and you can't stand smoking, or they are very loud and you're not loud, you know, whatever it may be. So it can be a terrific way to live in retirement, but you just, I think, need to find the right person to do it with.
Again, very sage advice. So somebody who didn't say who they are just said, a retirement consultant helped us with the financial bit. Getting involved with the Department on Aging and visiting those trying to age in place has been very rewarding. Scheduling some of my weekdays with swimming and walking clubs and taking classes at the local university, all those things, trying to stay busy and active and leave some time with occasionally nothing to do. And this person, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, says these are some of the things that have helped me after ending my 40-year career. And I think it ties in with some of the things you've been talking about, of finding things that interest you, scheduling some time, but not overly scheduling, and leaving time, some time for nothing to do are
yeah.
helpful and important. Yeah.
I think that person is definitely on the right track, doing a lot of smart things, and brings up a good point that we should talk about a little bit, which is the idea of aging in place. So a lot of people mm-hmm. want to continue living in the home they're living in, but it may not be suitable for them if they get older, because there are a lot of stairs, or the kitchen or the bathroom is not conducive to aging there. And we have a story that's going to be coming out on Next Avenue in the next couple of days about how to find home remodeler for aging in place. And there's something called a certified aging in place specialist. This is somebody who is a remodeler who has expertise in making homes better for people who want to age in place. So I would say, if you're thinking about staying where you are, but your home isn't really set up for that, you might want to find an aging in place specialist to help you do it.
That's a great idea. It also reminded me, I just have a client who is in her 70s who for the last few years has had college students living in her house because she wants to age in place right now, although she knows that ultimately it's probably not going to be a good idea for her. But it sort of ties in with, and she's had some remodeling done that makes it easier for her, but it also ties into the intergenerational living. It's not co-housing, but it's getting some extra income that she has, and she has
younger people.
Was just echoing there. She has younger people who help her, you know, with some of the things around the house, as well as income coming in with paying some rent, which is kind of a nice way to do it too. So I just wanted to mention that. Are you there still?
Hi, I'm sorry. It's Richard Eisenberg. I got cut off.
Sarah from Georgia says she's looked at the list at the end of your 9 Keys articles on Next Avenue and have several she wants to mention. She said the books How to Retire with Enough Money by Teresa
Gilarducci.
Yep, and right. The 5 Years Before You Retire by Emily Guy Birkin have been very
yes.
helpful to her in understanding
okay.
Social Security and Medicare. She also
okay.
recommends Get What's Yours for Social Security and Get What's Yours for Medicare.
Right,
so,
those are by Paul Solomon and a few other authors, Lawrence Kotlikoff. Those are very good books that tell you everything you would ever want to know about claiming Social Security and getting what you deserve from Medicare. And I agree with her on the book that she mentioned. The book, How to Retire with Enough Money, is a very straightforward, easy-to-understand book written by a very knowledgeable professor named Teresa Gilarducci from the New School in New York City, and she's an expert on retirement planning. And excuse me, the 5 Years Before You Retire by Emily Guy Birkin is a really great book that's it's good general advice, both financial and otherwise, about getting ready for retirement. And I really like the way Emily writes. I think those are both excellent books.
Great. And thank you, Sarah, for mentioning those things, too. Maria from Washington, D.C. says, whoops, I just lost the question. Hold on a minute. She was mentioning, hold on 1 minute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
quick, oh, here it is. Nope, wait a minute. For those interested in taking an active part in, quote, armchair historical research, consider volunteer transcription programs. The Smithsonian Institute, National Archives, Library of Congress, and many other organizations offer the opportunity to see history through the eyes of those who lived it by transcribing their words for others to access online. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but that sounds fascinating. Thank you.
Stuart from Mountain View says, are retirees using retirement coaching more? Not, in your opinion.
You know, more people are using retirement coaches, but most people are still not using retirement coaches. So I do think that the trend is in that direction, but it's still fairly unusual. One thing more people are using these days are retirement calculators. There are a lot of very good free calculators online, many of them from the big financial services companies like Fidelity and Vanguard and Schwab and T. Rowe Price. And they're not out there to sell you anything. What they are there to do is to help you figure out, how much money do I have? How much money will I need? How will the money that I have translate into the income that I'm going to need? So I would say, if you haven't done anything yet to try to start thinking about your finances in retirement, you might want to start with one of these retirement calculators, just for a ballpark idea of sort of how whether you're on track and what you might need to do to fix things if need be.
Great, thanks. So Renee from New York says, excuse me, a possible resource for helping people to job search after 50, 60, and beyond. She says many local libraries offer free programs for folks over 50. For example, she presents a program for midlife career change at Science Industry Business Library. For Science Industry Business Library, BIBL, for those who want to keep working and not retire. Generally, these presentations are very popular. Bringing in 60 to 80 people, many have come back to report that they've had success in seeking part-time or full-time employment, found that positive attitude about aging and following strategies that promote age can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's helpful.
Yeah,
go ahead, Rich.
I was going to say that sounds very helpful. And, you know, there are also people who get together in meetup groups locally where they meet with other people who are recently retired. There's something called the Transition Network, which is mostly for women who are moving into retirement. And I'd say the more you can spend time with other people who are where you are or getting close to where you are, you can help each other by, you know, throwing around ideas. There's a woman who's written a very good book. Her name is Elizabeth White, and she talks about what's called resilience circles, which is you get together with other people. This is particularly for people who've lost their jobs and want to work but are having trouble finding work, and they help each other by saying, well, I tried doing this, or don't do this because that didn't work, but you might want to try this, or have you heard about this place? And I would say, you know, for people looking for working in retirement, small businesses locally are often more interested in hiring older workers than large businesses, because large businesses tend to have, I'm sorry to generalize here, but I would say many times they have a bias against older workers that small and medium-sized businesses don't have.
I think that's probably very true. Linda from Potsdam says, this is in terms of sort of helping design aging-in-place environment. She says, occupational therapists who's worked in adult rehab could be a good resource to assist in designing an aging-in-place environment. I think that's a good idea, too.
Yeah, it's a very good idea.
And Lisa has asked if I could include a list of the recommended books that you've mentioned. Don't think I'm going to be able to have that ready when the recording goes out today, but if you haven't gotten the books down and don't want to listen to the whole recording again, if you want to send me an email, dorian@dorianmincer.com, I will try to pull together a list of some of the books that Richard has mentioned and make them available. I think that the recording link is going to be sent out this afternoon, and I have a client after this call, so I'm not going to be able to pull that together.
Can I mention a couple of other books? A few other books that I think are really helpful for having a happy retirement besides the ones we've already talked about. And one of them is by you, Dorian. The Couples Retirement Puzzle by Roberta K. Taylor and Dorian Mincer is a really great book for couples wanting to plan for their own retirement. There's a book called The Encore Career Handbook by Marcy Alboher, A-L-B-O-H-E-R. And this is a great book if you're thinking about an encore career and you want to give back and find purpose in your life. Another book that's really great for finding a job in retirement is called Second Act Careers. And it's by a woman who blogs for Next Avenue named Nancy Collamer, C-O-L-L-A-M-E-R. And then the last book I want to mention is called Getting the Job You Want After 50 for Dummies. It's part of the Dummies series, but it's really not for dummies. And it's by my friend and a writer for Next Avenue named Kerry Hannon, Kerry, K-E-R-R-Y, Hannon, H-A-N-N-O-N. And those last few books are very helpful if you're looking for finding a job or volunteering.
Absolutely. And I must say, I'm so proud to say that all of them have been people that I have interviewed over the years, so that I, and they're all wonderful books, and I appreciate your mentioning the one that I co-authored, The Couple's Retirement Puzzle. This has been just delightful. Oh, wait, would you please repeat the title? I just have a couple more questions here. Would you please repeat the title of the book about getting the most out of Social Security?
I think it's called Get What's Yours. Get What's Yours. And it's by three authors, Paul Solman, S-O-L-M-A-N, and Lawrence Kotlikoff, K-O-T-L-I-K, K-O-F-F, Kotlikoff. He's a professor at Boston University, and there's a third author. But I'm sure if you look online or go to your library, you should be able to find it. It's very good.
Wonderful. Well, this has been just delightful having you on the call. And I just wonder, do you want to let people know how they can learn more about Next Avenue and sign up and get the, you know, the articles?
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. So the website is nextavenue.org, O-R-G. And we have a weekly newsletter that is free, and it basically tells you some of the articles we've published in the past week. So it's a good way to keep up with what we're doing on our site. And if you go to nextavenue.org, you'll see a way to sign up for the newsletter. And we publish new articles every day. We have channels about money, a channel on work and careers, which are my two channels, a channel on healthcare, a channel on caregiving, a channel called Living, and a channel on technology. So I think you'll find lots of interesting articles that we're putting up, new ones every day for people in their 50s and 60s. And let me give you my email address if you ever have an idea for a story that you think we should do or a question you have. We're happy to see that. My email address is reisenberg, E-I-S-E-N-B-E-R-G, at nextavenue.org, O-R-G.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And I think a couple of other questions there now, but I'm just, you know, in be able to honor time. I appreciate that you've gone over now. So I just want to thank you so much for being here today and thank all of you for being with us today, too. And everybody who has signed up will get the recording. And thanks so much for taking the time. And I must say I'm a big fan of Next Avenue, as I think I said at the beginning. And thank you for all of the really wonderful work you do, Richard, with managing this and getting all these articles out and keeping all of us so well informed.
Well, thank you, Dory. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you and hear the great questions from your audience. And I'd love to do it again sometime.
Great. Well, you are invited to come back, so we will do that. Okay.
It's a deal.
Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio with Dr. Dorian Mintzer. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show, listen to past episodes, or download our free retirement transition guide, visit revolutionizeyourretirementradio.com.